Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is brought to you by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in new ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 204 of the podcast with Sigmund Brouwer, the author of Dead Man's Switch, published by Harvest House, and Unleashed, book 3 in the Retribution series, which is published by Orca Book Publishers. I met Sigmund at a conference in New England and was impressed with his rock and roll literacy program, as well as his emphasis on story. There's no doubt in my mind that his words and ideas here will leave an impression on you as well. Enjoy big time. Here is episode number 204 of the podcast with Sigmund Brouwer. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Sigmund Brouwer. I'm excited to get to talk to you again after getting to meet you face-to-face up in New Hampshire.
Matthew, this has been something I've been looking forward to as well. New Hampshire was great. I so much enjoyed sitting in on your presentation.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I loved
it. Yeah. You know, I learned lots. I learned
well,
so much.
Thank you. That's very sweet of you to say. I actually we had our state library conference on Friday, and in that neat way that happened in New Hampshire, again, the three of us keynotes just sort of ended up complimenting each other in the topics we were speaking on. And I referenced our trip to New Hampshire so often because of that it was just unplanned, but really beautiful the way that we all were sort of waving the banner the same way, but yet in different ways for readers and just for kids.
And you meant complimenting as in
complimentary, synchronizing. Yes. Unplanned, but yet, sort of weaving these threads together from the same strand. Yeah. It was really nice the way that it all sort of worked out that way. Here we are talking about whatever it even was that we're talking about, collaborating and being a hero for a child and championing our ideas and connecting with them the way that, from their interests, and just hitting all those different notes unplanned was really beautiful.
Yes. Well, and then here we are a few months.
Then here we are. So then it was like, we hit it off. You want to just come on the podcast? The schmoozy way that I always tend to, but I'm glad that you said yes.
Yeah. So let's talk.
I was just going to say, so you've got, always you've got books coming out and you've got stuff coming out, but why don't I just give you a minute? Dead Man's Switch is your newest, right? Did I have that note right?
It was my newest when we spoke.
There's more newer, better, not better necessarily, but not to compare yourself to yourself. But, so you've got stuff out. Tell me about the stuff you have out, Sigmund. Tell me all about it.
Well, forgive me while I break my arm patting my shoulder, but hey, Dead Man's Switch, since we spoke.
Right.
It won the Author Ellis 2015 Award for Best Young Adult Mystery in Canada. So
whoa,
I was pretty excited about that.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. And yeah, But a new one's come out, part of a series of three. The series is called Retribution.
Retribution, okay.
Retribution, three teenage kids who don't like each other have to combine forces to take down evil adult authorities.
Well, yeah. Now, why would they ever want to do that?
And why would any teenager in a rebellious mode of life decide they want to read a story about teenagers taking down adult authorities?
Right. On your homepage, I wrote down this because I was seeing that trailer. You, by the way, we need to talk about your book trailers. You make amazing book trailers. But that Retribution one, I have a bunch of notes. You know, I try not to just go straight from them, but this one I can't avoid, that it says, a homeless kid burning for revenge. I thought, you tell that to anyone, any adult, any child. Like, you, I don't know if it's just that you come from a place of knowing. You just know your readers, and you know what hooks them, and you've got that great language to do that. But it makes me feel like you're coming from like a film background too. That you just know this is going to get you to lean in.
Matthew, from my perspective, it's more about story than writing. I want stories out there that kids want, if that makes sense. So when it came to Retribution, I sat down with the two other authors, and we know that superheroes are popular, very popular.
Okay,
right?
Of course.
Got the Marvel movies. You've got S.H.I.E.L.D., you've got Flash, you've got Arrow. And we might just want to have a little conversation about why that's happening. You know, 15 years ago, we didn't have these heroes with specialized skill sets. Has society gotten to us to the point where we feel lost enough and confused enough that we're seeking some escape in fiction? You know, that the Superman is out there to help us, or the Arrow is out there. Why do you think those are so popular?
Well, I think about, even, it makes me think when they were first created back, you know, way back when it was, there's wars going on, there's things going on that people felt like they were hopeless to it. There's these wars happening, and I am just a person suffering under that, under the depression, under whatever. And yet here's
during the Cold War era.
Absolutely. And yet here's a way to see myself differently, or to see in some cases an everyman portrayed, but in other cases a person born into special circumstances. And in that way, I think it feels like, well, any of us potentially could be born into special circumstances. But then you've also got the idea of the outcast coming to a place of acceptance, because that outcast, and for whatever reason that they were cast out, ends up being the very reason that society needs them.
Yes, you just nailed it.
I was that outcast, or I am that outcast, right? I feel like, I mean, maybe you grew up that way too. I feel like I read comics because it was me. And being, I mean, at the time too, when we were reading comics, that was a nerdy thing to do. There was a great group of us that read them, and it was great. But I mean, for the most part, not everyone read comics or got why people read comics.
Yes.
So it's neat that we're in a place now that they're more accepted.
Yeah. And for the reasons that you suggested. Yeah. So in our discussion, we wanted to follow that same theme, you know, heroes with specialized skill sets. But we wanted to make those specialized skill sets something that our readers, our teenage readers, could feel it was them. So the one in Burned, the homeless kid burning for revenge, that's by Natasha Dean. She's an amazing author, and her homeless kid is a forger and an art thief.
A forger and an art thief.
Man. And she is determined to take down the cop who killed her family.
Mm.
And Judith Graves, her kid is an urban climber. There's a very specialized sport where kids are like graffiti artists, except instead of spray painting buildings, they learn to climb them. So her character, Raven, is able to climb any building, and she uses this to to steal cars. She loves scaling parkades and getting the cars and stealing them.
And then yours is Unleashed.
Unleashed.
I know this because I saw the cover and it made me think of Mission Impossible in a great way. I love the cover art.
I do like the cover because they don't show his face.
Right, and exactly.
I always feel that readers like imagining the face instead of having it realistically put on the cover for them.
And also, if we don't have a face, then it can be me. Right?
Yes.
I can be the character.
I'm glad you said that first because that was my secret too. Whenever I read my stories, whenever I read stories for me, I always like to imagine I'm that character.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So what happens in Unleashed then?
Jace is born into a very rich family, and he's determined to take down his father. His father needs to go to jail, so Jace is going to make that happen. He has so much money that he wants to be known for who he is, not his money. So he boxes under an assumed name in the inner city just to prove himself.
Do the characters in these three books connect, did you say? Or these are just or is it thematically that they're connecting because they want this retribution against the life that they've been born into?
Thank you for asking, Matthew. The fun part was they're all connected. Every one of the three stories shares two or three scenes. But you see it differently from each character.
Oh, that's awesome.
So,
that's amazing.
It is fun. When Joe and Raven blackmail Jace into helping them, you see it from Jace's point of view in his story and each of their point of view in their stories. And there's a few other interconnected scenes, so you can read them in any order. I learned from the Seven series, a series called Seven that I was part of, that librarians like it when there's no order to a series, because if you have to start with book one, there's a bottleneck in the library.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. No one moves on to book two until they've read book one. So the Seven series in Canada was, it was a real publishing success. And part of it was the fact that you could read them in any order.
Okay.
So same thing with Retribution. And it is just out last week.
Was it just that your congratulations last week? Oh my word! What perfect timing!
Perfect timing. Yes.
Was it that all three came out at the same time, or have there been? Has it been timed release between them?
No, they all came out at the same time.
Right on. So you can in fact read them in any order, and they do connect, but it's not right.
Yeah. And then, this is partly based on what happened with the Seven series as well. Now we have three authors all visiting schools talking about the series.
And, oh, I like that.
And generating a lot of fun.
So how do you write a series like this? Is it that, are you friends with Judith and Natasha? Like you brainstorm this idea together or something? Or did the publishers bring you together?
I'd met them at different conferences. Mm-hmm. And they're brilliant and they're personable and they go to schools and we discussed the stories. Then we each wrote our first draft. Then we traded drafts and made suggestions on each other's stories and kept going that way.
And you just had like this wonderful dinner or Skype or whatever email flurry that just said, why don't we write these three and we'll have this place where it just overlaps.
Yes. Yes, yes, and yes.
That sounds exciting.
All three ways worked. It was really fun reading their stories and seeing their perceptions of Jace, my character, and then seeing how Jace viewed them.
Yeah, I also like this idea that you have three different people writing in a series that connects, but it's not as if any of you need to change your writing style to make it feel like one person has authored all of the books. Rather, you're each writing. This is just a book for each of you that can stand alone or can connect, but it's your writing style. So the readership that you have already will read this and it will feel and look like what they're accustomed to.
Yeah. And it will introduce it'll introduce my readers to their styles and vice versa.
And vice versa, yeah.
And I think in a library, what I've also heard is that when you have one series written by one author, there isn't, let me flip that around. What we've discovered is librarians like it that one series can have three or four different styles and introduce their students to a variety of styles.
I think so. I mean, I look at one of the more popular series that was authored by a group of people recently is the 39 Clues series.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about how my students made the connection between, in particular, Jude Watson was one of the authors on that series. And she ends up being the woman who writes all of the Star Wars chapter books that they love. And then it was, oh, this is the person, among other people. The other thing I would say as a librarian, one of the fun things that you get from having a series like that exposes you to different authors, because it's impossible to stay on top of every author, even every great author out there. It's so, so hard. Collection development, it's hard. It just is, because there's so many books coming out. But when you have a series like this, if I didn't own books, now I'm an elementary school librarian, I don't own these books in my library, but if I didn't, for example, if I owned stuff from you because we've had a school visit or I've gotten to know your books and love them, so now I always buy your books or whatever, but I didn't know, for example, Judith, then this could cause me then to go into Judith Graves' catalog and buy her other stuff, or Natasha Dean's catalog if I didn't know that she had new stuff or didn't, whatever. It just, it brings more names back up into the front of your head, back into thinking about them.
As long as the stories are good enough to hold our young readers.
Absolutely. Otherwise, if it's, I mean, you run that risk of too, well, I guess anybody runs that risk, but to have your name associated with something that isn't a success can be, maybe it doesn't happen so much in publishing, but I'm positive it happens in film. I'm positive it does.
That's not the angle I was thinking of when I meant that. But thanks for pointing that out. Yes,
I am here to help you with your insecurities, Sigmund.
What I meant was, yes, you want to increase your collection as long as it gets circulation with your kids reading it.
Oh, as opposed to just buying a bunch of books that don't do anything.
And I know you know way more about that than I do.
I know that librarians are in this weird, wonderful but dangerous position. I don't take lightly the power I have to influence a reader in what they read. Kids come in and they want suggestions, and it's incredibly powerful to think that if I stand behind a book or if I really know a child well, then I can play sort of that blind date of, I know you really well. I know the things that you like. Here is an author that I think is writing in the style, or here's a story that I think hits on those things that you would like, but also challenges you a little bit, maybe because it's a little bit harder text than you're used to, or it deals with a content matter that's a little bit challenging for you. Or maybe it's just, maybe it's the book that I always point people to. My flagship for whether or not we would get along really well is, Do You Like Whales on Stilts by M.T. Anderson? Because it's the most bizarre, crazy book. But if I can suggest that to you and you love it, then you will love me, because I am that book.
Gotcha. Because interesting. And that leads to a bigger issue, or issue's the wrong word, because that suggests negativity.
It's all right. We can play on my insecurities too. This is great.
No, a bigger concept, which is how humans connect through stories.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, what a neat thing as well to just be in a place where that's what we do. My job when I'm at my best is to connect with you and to connect you to other things and to make you feel connected. I mean, fantastic that books have that power, that you, Sigmund, have that power as an author to make a kid feel like they're not alone or that their feelings are validated. I always think that that's powerful.
I'm making a note of that. I mean, yes, that is very profound, Matthew.
But not that you should ever be in the business of, not that you wouldn't, but you wouldn't, I wouldn't ever want to think that an author is like, I'm going to write a book about this topic because it really needs to be written and there's a hole in the market, because I have a weird feeling about things like that feeling like I think kids need to hear about experiences from someone who knows how to tell them. And there are some experiences that unless I've lived it, I don't think it's appropriate for me to be telling it.
Yeah. Huh. Huh. And you've given me more motivation next time I write.
Oh.
The fact that I could try to help someone not feel alone.
Oh, yeah. That to me is a big thing.
Yeah. Thank you.
There's a can I book talk to you for a second? Would that be appropriate?
Please do.
Okay, so there's this picture book that will be coming out any day now. And it's called Little Tree. And it's by Lauren Long. And he's a well-known children's literature author and illustrator. He has a series, very popular series, called Otis the Tractor. And they're wonderful. But in this new book, Lauren has written, and I'm not afraid to say it, what might be one of my favorite picture books ever. Okay. Because of how he reveals himself in this book. It's about a tree, a little tree, who refuses to let go of his leaves. And as the seasons pass, little tree holds onto those leaves, afraid to let them go. And the other trees around him start to grow and grow bigger and grow bigger. And all of the animals in the forest that visit little tree say, it's time. It's time for you to let go. You need to let go of your leaves. It'll be okay. You need to let go, in so many words. And in this way, it's a story about learning to let go so that we can grow. Okay. Learning to let those things in us die so that new life can grow in us. And I feel like there's a story there where a child can see themselves and an adult can see themselves and think, what am I holding on to that I need to let go of?
Yeah, okay.
And so there are chapter books that do this all the time as well. I guess to turn it back on to you, I wonder, you've been to schools. You've heard that your books are connecting with kids. Do you know, are you aware? Are you that aware? You must be aware, but are you that aware when you write these that there are things you're writing that will connect? Are you aware of like, oh, this character is going to connect with a ton of my readership?
No. No.
That's awesome.
I don't know if that's awesome.
I mean, it's kind of the magic of it. I like it.
It makes me think that maybe I need to be aware of that, whether and how it's connecting.
But it makes me...
That might take my writing to a higher level, because I'm always trying to get better with each new story.
But it could take you out of it in a sense, right? If you were thinking... I mean, I know that you're a person, because I remember talking to you in New Hampshire, that you're a person that lets the character find you, and then you write the story as the character is telling it to you.
But see, those, I don't know if you can reconcile them.
I don't know either. Yeah, I don't know.
Because when the character, the way I've been doing it with the character taking control, it's not me sitting down and saying, how can I come up with a character that's going to connect with kids who don't want to feel alone? And true. I'm just wondering if in my next story, if I flip that around and go, I want to find a character who's going to connect with the kids. In other words, I usually begin with story and let the character emerge from story. And I am just realizing from you, there's a whole new approach. I could come up with a character and let the character dictate the story. This is fun. Thank you.
I don't know what that would look like or what that even means, but I think that it's fun to think that. I wonder, I guess knowing your writing, I wonder how your writing would look different if you approached it differently. I have a feeling that it wouldn't change much because you have these great sensibilities as an author that I think it would still, the story would still bring the character where it needs to be in a great way. But there is something to be said for what if I started my character, what if I gave my character this set of limitations or this hand of cards, this is the hand that they're going to be dealt, and then figure out the story from the hand that they're dealt.
I like that.
I don't know. Well, and I'm done. There you go. Now it's your turn to do all the work.
Okay, sure. But no, that could be a very fun approach to the next story or stories. Okay.
Well, I guess, yeah, I mean, you're right. You are a story person if I say that, though, because I was going to say about the whole rock and roll literacy thing that you were connecting with all of us, and that I know you've got a book about that as well. But if I think more about music, it is connecting to a story, isn't it?
It is.
That makes it see it, yeah. It must be me personally. Then it makes me think it's not story. It's me. It's the person you're connecting with, because it's the when I think of how I connect with music, I think of the people that share the connection with the music with me. But maybe that means that we actually share a story, and that's why we connect. My head is getting all wibbly wobbly with this conversation.
Well, and for anyone listening, rock and roll literacy, I go into schools, I have a few key points. And one, the first one is that great songs are like great stories. They connect with us.
Right.
And they connect by grabbing us emotionally. So if you're in a story and that situation in the story is making you giggle, it's a great story. Right. You just talked about the story about the tree.
Right.
And the feelings that you get as you read that. So that's one of my key points to the kids. My next key point is that writing is a delivery system for story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you separate them, you can understand that you can be a... let me back up for a second. If you separate them from a teaching point of view, I think it makes you more aware that you are not critiquing a piece of writing. When a student hands in a story... too often the system has set us up to look at that story as a way to make the writing better.
Right.
You misspelled this. You need to capitalize this. You need some stronger verbs, and the focus is on the writing. But if we realize that what that student has offered us is a story, and humans share stories, and they're connecting with us through that story, and we first and foremost respond to that story, and then later on, and to me, the more lag you can have between reacting to the story and then reacting to the writing, the better. Because I've taught
that. Students. Sigmund, right? The way you worded it, the more lag you can have. I love that phrase. So, we talked about this, but I came from teaching fourth grade, and I love story. And you're right. When you're getting like a writing grade, so often that means I'm grading your grammar. I'm grading your punctuation. Mm-hmm. It does not mean I'm going to ignore all of that, and I'm just going to hear your story in the way that you're composing it, the way that you're crafting it, and how we can strengthen the storytelling ability, the mechanics that you're applying to that storytelling.
And even go one step farther in terms of simplifying it. Wow, you made me giggle. Thank you very much.
Right.
Oh, when I was reading this, I was kind of scared. I had to put it down. So the lag is, here's no lag, Matthew. You're a fourth grade student. You've just handed me a story, and I go, hey, this is really nice, but.
yes.
But this is what we need to work on.
But yeah. Yeah, this is really good, but you really, yeah, have a lot of mistakes here. Let's tighten this up. We'll just tighten it up. It'll be great. The story's going to be great. Gosh, what did that do to children? Poor children. Have I said that? I bet I've said that before.
We've all said that. That's the way we're taught.
Ouch.
But we are our stories.
Yeah.
Every time, and I had to learn that from an orthodontist. And I know you heard me say that in New Hampshire.
Right.
But I once asked him why he spent five minutes listening to my daughter tell him about her weekend, and it was a very nondescript, non-exciting story. And I said, why did you listen for 5 minutes? You're wasting time. You could have looked at her teeth. And he just said, there's a little girl attached to those teeth. And I realized that he was so right, that this story was important to my daughter. And if I'd have stepped in and said, Olivia, you know, we don't have time for your story, that would have been like saying, we don't have time for you.
For you, yes.
So to me, the lag is this. Wow. I cannot believe you made me giggle like that. What a great story. I need you to give me some more stories to make me giggle. And then maybe 3 days later, go back to the first story and say, you know, I've been thinking about this great story. I love your story so much. I bet we could make your story better if we made your writing better. And then we could share it with more people. So the longer the lag between, wow, your story made me giggle, and hey, let's fix these mistakes, I think the better. But we're in a time-driven educational system, and
right,
that was easy.
Well, so where did you get to this understanding? Do you come from teaching? Do you just come from experience? Did someone raise you this way or teach you this way? What brought you here? Because it's great. It's fantastic. I love it.
Well, it's so nice that you asked. I remember in seventh grade, a teacher told me my story was the stupidest story he'd ever read.
You're kidding.
And he might have been joking. He might have been sarcastic, but I didn't take it that way. And it shut me down for a long time. So I went into 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade not caring about being a better writer, because why should I care? You tell me I'm not good, I don't care. It's a great defense system. But in college, I had a professor encourage me. He said, he read my essay, ignored all the mistakes in writing, and just said, I love the quirkiness of this essay. I'd love it if you gave me more like that. And then I started really trying to live up to his expectations. And I guess I'm just going to repeat myself. If you understand that writing is a delivery system for story, I believe story is the engine that will get kids to read and to write. Matthew, one of my favorite things at schools, if I have, I play music and I've got banners and there's 400 kids in the gym. And then I look at the librarian and say, by the way, books are boring. And we always get a fun reaction. But then I point out that books are just paper, glue, and ink. And what we really mean is stories are exciting. The book's just a delivery system for story.
Right.
So let's stop saying I'm going to read a book or I have to read a book. And let's start saying, hey, I get to read a story. And then if I get the students to agree with me on that, Matthew, your library is the iTunes of stories. You choose a song because you want to feel happy, or you choose a song because you want a mournful ballad to go into a different emotional space, let's start choosing stories the same way. Let's send our kids to the library saying, I want you to deliver me a funny story. And I know you can, right? You know your collection really well.
Right.
But if you had...
But to have them do it, yeah.
Had kids choose stories for how they want to feel, then they'll understand that... I'm going in circles here.
No, well, here's what...
If you say to a kid, hey, you've got a great story, deliver it through writing, and then they deliver you a story through writing and you giggle at their story, you have just connected with them and they will keep... Here's where I'm going with this. They will keep giving you more and more stories because they love connecting with you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's inevitable that their writing will get better. Whereas if we focus on their writing, they're going to stop wanting to give you any kind of stories whatsoever and their writing's going to suffer. I mean, that's my snapshot theory.
It's giving me a couple of things that's coming to mind. One, it works the exact same way as when a child makes me a drawing. When a kid makes me a drawing and hands it to me in class, and I'm like, oh, this drawing is amazing. And then suddenly the rest of the class wants to do drawings for me, which is great. Or if I hang it up and then that same kid brings me something more and more, which is amazing. But it also made me think, and I love this idea, and I don't know if you intended it this way or not, but in the literal sense in that library, bring me a story that's funny, bring me a story that's whatever. It's that thought alone is actually causing me to think, Sigmund, of challenging kids to go out and find themselves in these stories. Find a story that connects to you and bring it to me so that I can understand you more and better, because this is a story that connects to you. It makes me feel like, gosh, I would love to do that with my students, and absolutely could, but just have never done that before, to say, here is a book that I feel like this book gets me. This book understands me and makes me understand myself in a way that I didn't even know myself. So find a book in here that gets you. I would love to know about a book in my library that gets you. And that way you could see that this is not my library. This is our library, because these books are here for you. They're not here for me.
May I be pedantic? I think that's said correctly.
Please.
I would use the word story instead of book. Find a story that is you.
Right.
And that's only me, because I spend all my time trying to get kids to understand it's all about story. It's not about books.
Right. No, I absolutely understand that.
It's just a hard habit to get out of.
Well, it's a paradigm shift, isn't it?
Yeah, but I fall into that same habit all the time. I intermingle books and stories. But let's face it, Matthew, there are lots of books that don't have stories. Telephone books don't have stories.
Well, and let's go the other way, that there's lots of stories that aren't in books.
Yeah. So, but I'm listening very carefully to what you're saying, because if we can say to a student, find a story in here that connects with you, and I want to read that story, wow, what a way to connect with that student, because you're going to understand him or her through those stories.
Well, and I think even beyond that too, the actual act of, I'm going to pick up this book and read this story, and you're going to see me do that and know that I am doing it because I want to know you better. It's almost this wonderful symbolism that here's an act that you can see. You can see unequivocally that I want to know you. And that when I read this book, I think about you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. It's a really good business to be in. And I can tell that you're in it too, to be in a place where we respect children as much as we do. And we want to expand their world, as much as it's very clear to me that you're in the business of expanding worlds.
It is fun. It's very fun and satisfying.
Mm, yeah. And yes, to be writing and also be on the other side of it, I think it's great that you get to be in schools as much as you do. You were saying to me before we started recording, did you say you're doing, in some of these days, you're doing 3 schools a day?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm glad it's fun. Boy, if it wasn't fun. Yeah.
No, I get to go into the gym, set up my banners, set up my sound system, play music that they love as they come in, and then turn the tables and look at them and say, hey, don't forget, Daddy had his own good music when Daddy was in school, and hit them with ZZ Top and just watch it electrify these guys. I get to do that 3 times a day.
That's awesome.
And then I get to tell stories.
Sigmund, you are a great guy. It's so fun to talk to you. I'm going to blow your mind perhaps a little bit to tell you that our time has come and gone.
I cannot believe how quickly it went.
I think the problem is that we blinked.
We did blink.
This was an absolute pleasure. I felt it when we were in New Hampshire, and I want to say it again. I'm really thankful that, well, really, to be personal, that you stepped into my life, because I feel like I understand the world and my readers and their stories better because I know you, and I don't take that lightly. I don't take that coincidence lightly that we ended up at the same place and that we share these same values and that we're working for the same goal. I don't take that lightly, and so I really do mean deeply, I am really thankful that you've come into my life and that I know that you're out there in the lives of all of these readers and in schools and libraries too.
Matthew, thank you. That means a lot to me. And I am, as we're speaking, I'm looking at your Skype photo.
Yeah, with my son.
Yes.
My Skype photo of my son who painted my face with his face paint.
Your face. That is wonderful.
Is so proud.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, I have a question I ask all of my guests, and I am very excited to hear. I don't know that we even discussed this question when I met you, but since you've come to know the podcast, perhaps you've come to know the question. So here we go. I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team kickball tournament, and I would love to know what one person, alive or past, from the Kidlit world you would want on your team and why.
Franklin W. Dixon.
Franklin W. Dixon. Why Franklin W. Dixon?
as the author of The Hardy Boys.
Right.
Some hundred and some.
Yeah.
Here's what broke my heart. Look, when I was in fourth grade, I scoured. Of course, we didn't have internet. I scoured whatever I could with encyclopedias and our limited resources in our small town in the prairies to learn anything I could about Franklin W. Dixon. And I just wished I could meet him someday. And as you probably know, it turned out it was just a pseudonym for authors who were hired to fill in outlines, which when I found out did break my heart.
Oh.
But whoever came up with the concept of the Hardy Boys, I'm going to say, has made a huge positive contribution to society. To anyone who will listen to me, when you write a story that can be retold 100 different ways so that someone like me will read all 100 because I'm comfortable with the characters and the writing level, you are having a huge impact. Matthew, I did the math. At roughly 30,000 words per book, between fourth between fourth and sixth grade, Franklin W. Dixon motivated me to read over 3 million words.
Oh, man. If that isn't a slap in the face to whatever problems people have with formulaic text.
I know you wanted some huge, some wonderful, but...
Are you kidding? I love that. Imagine if Franklin W. Dixon can motivate you that much to read 3 million words. Imagine what we can do on the field.
Absolutely. So, and any kid who's going to read 3 million words is going to be better at reading and writing, and that's going to have such a positive impact on what they can achieve as adults. So
that is absolutely right.
Throw Franklin W. Dixon and his 3 million words into the mix.
You are awesome. I look forward to you coming back on here, telling me about whatever the next great book is that you have coming out, and more importantly, coming back to talk about stories. Thank you so much again, Sigmund, for coming on.
Matthew. Thank you. Till next time.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the books at allthewonders.com. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.